Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKee, for you, and this is episode number 273. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Samson, for bringing this to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in both the people and the product, and they are fantastic people. They have a great product. So if you're in the market, please reach out. If not, please let them know how much you appreciate them being part of the show. This week, I am joined by a great friend and recently completed his PhD, Dr. Aaron Wellman. Excited to have you on the show, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ron. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we've been in this field for about the exact same period of time, and you know, you've been in Ball State, Notre Dame, Michigan, San Diego State. Now the head strength coach with the Giants, and probably a couple other stops in there I'm missing. Which one of those jobs, I mean, which one do you think you kind of credit to being the place where you really became your own person, the coach that you are today?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all as coaches, as we move throughout the profession, take bits and pieces along the way. But, you know, I think that my time, I think a little bit from each one, right? My time in Indiana, I was there 5 years, and really kind of learned the profession in Indiana and just the demands of the profession, not only from a time demands, but just an emotional and physical demands, really, of the job. As I was a graduate assistant, received my master's degrees there, and became a full-time assistant there. But then it was fortunate, after 5 years in Indiana, to go to Michigan State, and Coach Manny, who I have the utmost respect and admiration for as a, not only as a coach, but as a man, really, I would say that's where I cut my teeth.
Yeah.
Coaching and really learned the art of coaching. You know, certainly we all kind of hone our skills on communication and motivational aspects and even the science and practice of strength training, but really, I learned to cut my teeth at Michigan State. And then from there, went on and took a head strength job at Ball State. And I think most guys would agree that 6 months on the job as a head strength coach is like 3 years of education as an assistant.
Right.
And in my case, primarily because of mistakes that I made, right? I mean, so right. Sometimes we learn the hard way, and sometimes we learn easy way where we make a mistake and it does no harm. And so I think I've taken – something from every stop, at least I try to. And again, I try to take something from every day on the job here that helps not only me, but helps my athletes.
Yeah. You know, I wrote in my book that I wanted to be Kid Manning when I grew up, you know, and that's, I mean, he's such a phenomenal, phenomenal person. You mentioned some of those mistakes, you know, we've all made them. We continue to make them every day, but right now at this point in your career, what's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you learned from it?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. We continue to make mistakes, and I just hope – we just hope that as we gain experience, the mistakes become less frequent and less intense, right? And we learn some the easy way with not making that one big mistake that's going to result in the injury or a number of other things. But I think the biggest mistake that I've made, I think, is that football, like many professions, is still a people business, right? And that includes – so how we communicate and how we interact is so important. And I think that not only includes coach to coach, but coach to player certainly. And I think as performance coaches, I know that I've fallen prey to this. We get so we're so passionate about improving our physical ability of our athletes, about mitigating the risk of injury, about and then educating on nutrition, training, recovery protocols. We get so locked in and singularly focused on that we forget that when 20 to 30 players walk in the room, they're all individuals, all with their own problems, you know, the struggles they're facing, and most likely didn't come into that training session as fired up about the session as I am too.
Sure.
to conduct the session, right? And so I think when there's a mismatch between not only motivation, but why you're doing and the importance you see things, I think that's when there's maybe some clashing at times with athletes. And so I think the biggest mistake I've made is that, you know, these guys are coming to the room, they're not robots. We have struggles as coaches just like they do. We have family issues just like they do. But sometimes, you know, maybe we're able to put ours aside for that period of time and focus where, you know, this player has big issues, bigger sometimes than we can imagine.
Right.
And so I think that's, you know, when the players come in the room, understanding that, having a good feel for your athletes, getting to know your athletes and knowing what they're going through and being understanding, but at the same time, look, there's an expectation that we need to uphold.
Right.
When we come in the room.
Yeah, I would echo that. I would add to it that, you know, that relationship with your players is probably the utmost importance, but that relationship with not just the coaches, but the general management, the athletic director, the custodian, everything. Right. Those were relationships that I didn't do a great job early on in my career of building that, making it that everybody enjoyed interacting with you instead of being walking around like a tyrant and your singular focus was the weight room, you know, and that's, I made that mistake really early and for a long time in my career.
Yeah, I think, Ron, I think we all have. And I think it just stems from, you know, it's lack of understanding probably of the bigger picture to some degree.
Great.
But it is really just, I think, a result of just being singularly focused and being passionate about what we do and not taking into account some of the things that go into this. And you know, like you said, everyone in the building is there to help us win games,
right,
to do what's best for the players. And so, you know, to lock arms with those people and make us all part of it, I think is critical.
Yeah, agreed. Well, man, you're in the middle of training camp right now. And I know that's, there's a lot of coaches that are in, you know, finishing up or going through and it, you know, 20 plus years of being a strength and conditioning coach, working with football. I still don't know if I ever had the perfect plan for a training camp situation. You know, what are some of the challenges that you face during training camp and what are some of the ways that you've addressed those challenges?
Yeah, I think the challenge, whether we're at the pro or college level, is just the balancing the amount of workload, the external load that the players undergo and they're required to undergo as part of the positional demands of practice and competition. Balancing with that, how do we balance that with our weight room work, with any extra conditioning that we may need, and how do you have a periodized or a plan going into camp? And I think why we all struggle with that is because you have, again, we're dealing with individuals, right? And there's always individual responses, an individual internal response to the external loads that they face. And that the individual response not only varies between player to player, but it is intra-individual, meaning today I may respond differently to that same workload as I did last week because of external factors of stress, sleep, of nutrition, hydration status. So, you know, in order to periodize a plan, we have to understand how the individual works and you have to know what adaptations will occur with individual. And that's a problem, right? And so I think that, you know, for us, the education of our athletes, I think is critical that we educate our players every day on training loads, on why we're doing what we're doing, on recovery protocols, how they're feeling, but developing a relationship with the athletes so that I put a lot of stock in the relationship so that I can get feedback from the athlete. You know, we don't do formal questionnaires here, but we do informal questionnaires where I'm always asking, and I want their honest opinion. How are you feeling? Tell me how you're feeling.
Yeah.
What do you feel like you need? What do we need to take out today? What are you feeling on the field? Just so you know, the guys that are honest and you've got to build a relationship with, they can kind of tell you. Some of these guys are very in tune with their bodies and kind of tell you what they're feeling on the field, sometimes even at top speeds. And so that relationship with the athletes, I mean, that helps us the most. Certainly we have a general plan for position work in the weight room, but we really seek to, in training camp especially, kind of stabilize, you know, Bonder, Chuck, and a lot of guys talk about stabilization of loads, and I think that's critical that we – stabilize the load in the weight room because that is the load will not be stabilized throughout training camp. And so right. In order to understand adaptation, try to get really put a thumb on why soreness is occurring. Our loads in the weight room have to be more stable so that we remove the guesswork out and we can maintain some of those physical qualities that are necessary to.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You mentioned education and relationships. And it's, you know, relationships are easy when you're asking questions like that with those athletes that are pros that are going to give you good feedback. But we know that the reality is that a lot of those guys, you know, they're not coming in with a kinesiology degree or a science degree or really understand what all the numbers mean and all that. When you talk about, you know, and the coaches aren't giving you, they're not giving you an hour every day for you to conduct an exercise science class and explain all the things you're doing. What are some of the tactical things you're doing to kind of teach your athletes what they should be looking for, what numbers they should be listening to, and some of those characteristics?
Yeah, I think a lot of the education for us, some of it occurs on the floor, but like you said, we may have 40 minutes with 45 guys. So a lot of it occurs in the cafeteria. A lot of it occurs on the way to meetings. A lot of it occurs in the locker room. Some of it occurs during a recovery session. But really, I think we need to partner with our athletes so that they can give us feedback. Now, I don't – for us to expect them to understand and appreciate the why is asking a little bit too much, although you and I both worked with players who are really into that, and so you can have a deeper conversation. But – our job, I think, as performance coaches is to get feedback from the athlete. And then we, on our time, we solve that movement problem or we solve that physical problem the athlete's having. And then come back with perhaps some different exercises or better training, some different modalities within the training session to help the athlete. And again, get their feedback again, okay, and then go back to the drawing board and maybe reinvent some things with that athlete. But the education piece, I think, is you're not going to – it's like we all understand the importance of sleep. Well, educating them on some of the aspects of why is important, but it's not – you know, we don't – to your point, we're not given an hour, nor do our athletes want to listen to us for an hour, explain some of those things, right? So it's – I think it's a – you know, what are your two or three big rocks?
Right.
You know, for us, our big rocks for – player recovery or hydration, nutrition, and sleep. So what are the big rocks? And if those are the big three, then we've got to constantly hit it. Maybe a 30-second conversation in the hallway, but constantly make that the focus. And so, but within the training program, obviously it's feedback from our athletes and partnering with our athletes is a crucial part of this that I think could potentially be overlooked in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that. And that it takes time. I mean, like the things that you said, you know, when you're in the middle of the grind, you don't necessarily want to give up the little bit of rest time you have to go sit by the cold tubs and be talking to the athletes or spend an extra 30 minutes in the cafeteria. But those things require, I mean, that comes back tenfold in an investment when it comes to asking for that buy-in for various reasons or that communication back. So.
And I'll tell you this, you know, we have a, particularly in camp and throughout the season, we have a shuttle that will take our players to and from the hotel for guys who don't have cars or don't or like not to use their car. And just walking out, and if there's three guys saying, hey, I'll take, you know, hey, you don't have to wait 10 minutes on the shuttle, jump in my car, I'll take you to the hotel. Now, obviously, after being here 16 hours, I'd love to see my kids. But look, at the end of the day, 15-minute ride to the hotel paid dividends for both of us. So just – I think there are more opportunities than we think, but I think we have to look for opportunities to do that and not just stumble across the opportunities.
Agreed. I remember being in NFL Europe and we would have an hour drive. It was literally an hour in to practice every day and an hour back. And I would sit next to a different player every time in and out just to get to know them. I'd ask them about their college strength coach. I'd ask them, you know, I had a whole series of questions in it. Made me close with them, but it also gave me a lot of great information and made me a better coach for sure.
Right. And like you said, you were very intentional with that. And I think you have to be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We both worked in the NFL and we both worked in college. And I often talk about what I think that, you know, the differences are and the positives and the negatives, but what do you think the difference is between working in the NFL or pro sports versus college sports?
Well, I think there are some subtle difference and some really not so subtle differences that are glaring. first I'll say this, that, you know, my job here with the Giants, I really, and I told this to someone this morning, I've got the best job in the world. I mean, to be the head strength coach of New York Giants, it doesn't get better than this for me. And so I'm very fortunate to work with a great organization, blessed to have the opportunity. The biggest differences that I see between college and NFL is really the most glaring one's the calendar, right? Simply the amount of time we have to develop our athletes.
Right.
And to build some sort of training load that we feel good about in our athletes. When the season's over, our guys are gone for 14 weeks. We know the CBA rules, and the CBA rules are the same for every team. So we all play by the rules. But it becomes problematic when 90 guys come back and we have no idea of their recent training history of the last 14 weeks. And kind of we have a goal as a strength coach of where we want to go.
Right.
How we get there is dependent on the type of training status they come in with. And so those are unknowns, and I think that makes it difficult. Whereas in college, you really can bring a player in, and as you know, for the most part, with the exception of 8 to 10 weeks, you're with that player and you're with them for 4 years in most cases, and you can really develop them in a lot of physical qualities. So we do get a 8 to 9 week off-season period, two of which are really strength and conditioning and meetings, and then another three, which are a little bit of strength and conditioning, then we go to OTA. So our time is limited. And then I tell you, the same thing happens in the summer where they go for 6 weeks and then we start training camp. So, again, just trying to determine the status of our players physically when they come to us makes things problematic for load programming and some other things. Whereas in college, you kind of have your thumb on the guys, right? When you report to camp, look, as a strength coach, the head coach says, hey, how strong is so-and-so? You have your thumb, right? You can tell the head coaches your body weight, the body fat, how they ran, their strength levels, and kind of give them just – without looking, you just know you have your thumb on your guys. And so that's a big difference. In the room, on the floor, in practice, it's not that much different. I mean, it's football. It's relationship business. The same rules apply, the same methodology in many cases. But the communication and partnering with the athletes, I think, is different at this level, and I think it needs to be.
Yeah, I think that, unknown of knowing where they're at. I think it requires you to have a bigger toolbox. I think you have to come in with such a in college you had a pretty consistent, you had 8 weeks in the winter, you had 8 weeks in the summer. You knew what kind of worked for developing players, that sophomore, that senior, whatever it may be. But when you walk into an NFL setting or a pro setting, they're coming back. Some of those guys trained maybe too much. And some of those guys, didn't train at all, and it doesn't really change the fact that those guys are probably going to play come training camp or OTAs or whatever it is. So what I always tell people is that you deal with a more informed consumer. You got somebody that has an understanding of what they think works, and you have to kind of try to get them consistently on a similar message, similar trajectory and all that, and that becomes problematic or challenging. But it all goes back to what you said. What I say is I think you got to have a great toolbox and be able to be adaptable for sure.
Yeah, and Buddy Morris and I talk about this a lot, that, you may spend 2 months writing up in your mind what you believe is the most pristine off-season program, and literally 10 minutes into the warm-up, day one, you've changed the entire program, right? Because you realize, these 10 guys really haven't done much. These 10 guys have done a whole lot. And so just like you said, you hit it perfectly, that your toolbox has got to be big, and you've got to have a backup plan and a backup plan to the backup plan in some cases for training sessions.
Well, one of the things you're notoriously known for is your morning routine. What time did you get to work this morning?
We're in camp, so a lot of these nights are leaving the office at 9:30 to 10. So I got in about 5:30 this morning.
5:30, which is late.
Yeah, the one thing I'm trying to do is get a little bit more sleep, because we talk about with our athletes so much. But, I don't really have a morning routine other than get up early and get out of the house as fast as I can and get to work. But, typically I'm up at 4 o'clock, 3:30 or 4 o'clock. And it's not it's more of a compulsion. I've always been worried that if I sleep in, I'm missing out on some information.
Yeah.
You know, that if I sleep, why would I sleep another hour when I can come in and read and research? And so I am trying to get better at getting a little bit more sleep. But that's, you know, I've been, you know, you do it for so long, and I'm sure you're the same way, and several other coaches are the same way, that they're kind of, you know, passionate, excited about what they do.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a forced morning person. I'm up early, but I don't necessarily want to be.
you probably do work at night, I would guess.
Right? Absolutely.
And so I'm the opposite. I mean, I'd rather be in bed at 9:30 or 10 and be up at 3.
Yeah.
And be up till midnight. So, I mean, it's the same work's getting done, right?
Absolutely. Now, a little bit was ribbing, but a little bit of it is, you know, I think as coaches, I think you would agree, like you said. I mean, I'm a night owl. I'm gonna work until I crash. You know, I usually go to sleep based off exhaustion, not because of because I'm done. You know, and but then I'll turn around and get up early. And I think what you said is paramount, is that we can't sit there and preach to our athletes that sleep's important if we're not willing to adjust our schedules to make sure that we are coming in sharp and ready to go, and being disciplined and being accountable to the responsibilities that you have. And I know you've always done a good job of that with yourself, but then also you've passed that on to assistants that have worked for you and those types of things. And I think it is an important lesson that you have to attack the day.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the athletes will turn it around on you too, right? They're going to, you know, hey, if I'm asking you when you went to bed and got up, you're going to ask me the same thing, right? And so they'll say, so hold on a second. What? You're not sleeping. You're right. I'll do a better job as well, you know.
Well, you, I know you're, I mean, you're obviously, you know, again, we've been personal friends for a long time. I mean, you're a great husband, you're a great father. You know, we always strive to be those things. But we always, you know, we come up short sometimes. We're probably the hardest on ourselves. But talk a little bit about trying to balance this job as much as you can with being a parent and a husband.
Yeah, I think that is one of the most outstanding questions that you can ask any coach. And I don't know that I have a great answer, and I don't know that I have great advice, because like you said, you know, I think a lot of us have failed, you know, at this unknowingly till we look back on things. Certainly, you know, the requirements of the job are that we work long hours.
Right.
Which also means hopefully we have a understanding spouse, and we have kids who also understand and appreciate what we do and can kind of get excited about kind of sewing, quote unquote, the family business, right? But right. I've always admired people who get to the tops of their profession, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. And I've always thought that to some degree, to get to the top of profession, you do have to be somewhat out of balance.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think you can, I think work-life balance is somewhat of a misnomer in those who reach the tops of their profession. I'm not trying to be negative with that. What I've come to realize for myself is that I'm going to be out of balance. If balance is the same amount of time at home as at work, balance, because I'm here, I'm at work more. So what that means for me is when I'm at work, I've got to be completely unbalanced, and I'm going to be all in at work. And when I'm home, I want to be completely unbalanced, and I want to be home. And I want to be the best dad. I want to be present. I want to be a great husband, and I want to leave work behind. Now that's where I failed in the past, where I'd come home,
still work.
I'm thinking about work. And when I get up, I'm thinking about work. And I think that's where, as coaches, that would be my advice to, and I say young coaches, I still consider myself a young coach, because I'm not even close to learning, to knowing and learn as much as I need to know and learn. But that would be my advice. Look, I think you have to be out of balance to reach the top of your profession. I really do.
Yeah.
But I think when you're at work, you're at work. And when you're home, you got to be home.
Yeah.
There much. And so I think our kids, they, when we're home, they want us locked in on them.
Yeah.
And I think they appreciate that, knowing that we're not home that much.
Yeah. That's exactly what I say too. I always say that there's seasons of life, you know, and so there's some points in your career when it's going to be 80% at work and 20% at home. But
the difference is that you got to be 100% present where you are, you know, and when you are at home for that 20%, you better be 100% there, because it's fleeting time that you don't get back.
And sometimes that's easier said than done, right? And so we have to be able to catch ourselves and check ourselves. And hopefully, I know I have a wife that
she'll do that. Yeah. So am I. Well, man, we end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Yeah, that's a great question. When I took the job at Michigan State, you know, as a young coach, and I was, you know, this was 2001, I was 27 at the time, and you know, with Coach Manning, we all want to, you know, emulate the guy in charge, and kind of because we want to get to where he is one day with the knowledge he has and the command he has, and the first thing he told me was, "Hey, look, I don't want you to be like me; just be yourself." Right, and so that always stuck with me, that sounds, you know, very simplistic. But again, we can look at that on so many different levels. I think we see this a lot now with coaches trying to emulate. I'm a graduate assistant. I'm going to emulate the head strength coach. Or I'm an assistant, and I'm going to have the energy that the head strength coach has.
Right.
It's not really me. And eventually, you can't continue that for your career, and it wears you out, right? And so I think all of us are passionate. All of us have energy. We all choose to display it, perhaps maybe differently. But just being comfortable in your own skin as a coach and being yourself as a coach, I think the athletes appreciate that. Yeah. And so that piece of advice, I think, is crosses many generations of coaching. I think it never gets old, right? I mean, as coaches, we have to be ourselves. And then the only, you know, and Ronnie, you and I have talked, and my dad passed away about a year and a half ago. When I went to college, my dad gave me a folder. It had 57 tips on life, success in it. And one of them, he said, and we've heard this before, don't waste time learning the tricks of the trade. Instead, learn the trade. And so I think sometimes, you know, we see guys who maybe progress to the profession too fast, or maybe land a big job maybe they're not ready for.
Right.
Or get there a way that, you know what, maybe it was too fast, right? Too fast for, but learning, having time and progressing as a coach.
Great.
Learning the trade and the science and the art of communication instead of the tricks of the trade, aligning with the coach, getting a head job. And there's nothing wrong with that. Okay. And that happens. And that's, those people are fortunate, but just learning the tricks of the trade, I think, is in the long run helps us.
Yeah, agreed.
Learning the trade, not the tricks of the trade, right, is what I meant to say.
Agreed. Could have said that better. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
The last four or five books I've read, I try to read, you know, one every week or 2 weeks, and I'm late to the party on this. Start with Why.
Yeah.
Simon Sinek, right? That's an outstanding book, and, you know, people don't buy into what you do. They buy into why you do it.
Great one.
Some of John Gordon's books, you know, the most recent Power of a Positive Team, I enjoyed that. One I just got done reading was called Training Talk, Conversations with a Dozen Master Strength Coaches, and that was Martin Bingeser, who put that out. So it's got 12, so just interviews with 12 coaches, outstanding book. And then one that I keep on my desk is one, it's a literary essay written in 1903 by James Allen called As a Man Thinketh.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've read it.
I have.
Okay. And I'm again, written in 1903, really dealing with the power of thought and like how it deals with our own life and happiness. But the problems and the recommendations in 1903 hold true today.
Yeah, agreed.
Read through it. I mean, so those are the last kind of four or five things that I've read.
Yeah, those are great. Those are great. Any apps or websites?
You know, apps, I can't give you one. I'm not adverse to technology, but if it helps us,
right,
the coach or helps our athlete, I'm all for it, but I don't have a good recommendation on the app. The websites, you know, I think a lot of us jump around to different websites. Simply Faster website seems to put out great content a lot, and I'm kind of right in the middle of doing a deep dive into some of Bondarchuk's methodology, and Hammer Media website run by Martin Venuser are kind of the two of the ones that I'm kind of gravitating towards right now.
Yeah, both good. Both really good. Well, man, like, you know, I don't tell you enough, but, you know, you've been one of the closest friends I've had in the business and a confidant for me through the years. And I've just been, you know, I've always respected how you go about your job, how you go about being a father and a husband, and the same commitment you have to try to leave it better than you found it. And I just appreciate that. I know everybody that's listening, I appreciate you coming on the show as well, brother.
I appreciate you having me. I've enjoyed several of your podcasts. It's an honor to be on the podcast, and it's great just to catch up.
Absolutely.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.